Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
Well, folks, it's now or never. What's it going to take to get you involved? Now, I really appreciate all of you who have been listening for a long time, and I appreciate those of you who have begun to start listening. We're going to start getting into, because today's the last day we're going to be going through this appeal for this case and the argument that Bob Schultz has put out to the court, basically proving to them that they failed to do their job. And for the record, they are turning their back on the Constitution, and he hasn't walked away yet. And so to get this appeal through, and I don't know how many times you can get appeals through, what we need to do, and so at the end of the show, we're going to be, you know, giving you exactly where to go, because it'll be, and if you go to our Take Action page, this is where you'll find all of the information right at the very top of how to get a hold of attorney generals across the United States. Specifically, the ones we're going to have, we'll highlight. These are the ones we want to focus, because these are the ones that we believe in, you know, these particular states, and because these have been very, very active in attacking, or at least they're getting credentials. Now, see, when you talk about somebody that's a conservative, they, you know, does somebody like Trump? When Trump was running for president, he had no credentials as a, no evidence, no real proof that he was a hardcore constitutional conservative. He was a businessman. And in so his campaign, when we look at that campaign, you know, he was claiming that he was this huge, when all of this evidence was more, he was more of a liberal. He was more of a progressive, you know, the New York values, those types of things. And so, when you look at like Governor Abbott or some of these, the Texas Attorney General and some of these other attorney generals, they're not really that conservative. They're really, you know, they may put through these cases, but why is it they didn't appeal? Or, well, actually, I guess when those cases went up, they really couldn't appeal because the Supreme Court had the final ruling. You've heard from me over and over and over again that the Supreme Court does not have the final ruling. As a matter of fact, I implore everybody to read Madison's report on the Virginia resolutions. This is a formal and official document explaining to the state legislatures in the world that when it comes to the Constitution being a compact, the federal government was never empowered to become the final arbiter of all things. Their limitation in being a judge or being the final arbiter was limited to those few things enumerated within the Constitution. We go through this a lot. So with that, let me just kind of leap forward, because again, go to our Take Action page, and we're going to kind of explain when we're all done with this, other people that we need you to actually go out to and get involved, because there's no doubt in my mind, some of these people, I think, do have vested interest in one, either saving their career or saving their butt. And I'll just give you one great example, Madison Caldwell. And he's the representative out in North Carolina. We want you to get a hold of his office to say, how come you're not a part of this lawsuit? How come you're not? Because bottom line, when he was out there on January 6th, he has to change the paradigm that he wasn't out there protesting. He was out there petitioning. You know, I was a part of this big, huge national petition to Congress for them to do their doggone job. Anyway, let us move forward. This show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you're listening to the only show that goes through the academic evidence and evidence-based solutions. If you are in the point in your life where you are ready to take control of your finances, please, this is the most important, probably one of the most important decisions other than who you choose as a mate for your life, getting on top of your financial situation so that you are in control of your finances completely. Fortitude Financial Coaching will help you do that. Gary Smith, go see him. Call him up. Free Constitution classes at constitutioneducation.us. And oh, by the way, just go to our other links page. This is where you can find all the information on our these people we're promoting. Or if you can, if timbernation.com isn't simple enough for you, right? Timbernation.com, constitutioneducation.us, adlocal.com, or radiodustcovers.com. These are the people that we highly promote. We can't say enough good things about patriots and good people like this. Harry, I hope you're listening. He's a progressive I went to school with, high school with, and he's constantly trying to justify why he keeps voting for progressives to me. And the reason why he has to justify, because he knows that he is actually voting for subjugation. He knows that he's moving America down this path of socialism. And I'm going, wow. I mean, why don't you just be honest with me and say, you know, I'm a real fiscal conservative. I'm a real national security kind of guy. Then why in the heck did you vote for Biden? Why in the heck were you voting for Hillary? Well, because I just didn't like Trump. Come on, get out of here. Anyway, our comment line, 425-270-5416. Any comments whatsoever, dumb, stupid, we will play them if we want to find them relevant. We're not here to make fun of anybody. I don't do that. And as a matter of fact, I don't even do gotcha interviews. The people I interview are people that I am actually trying to either verify that they're good constitutional people or let them speak for themselves, and or what we want to do is actually start having and getting people on the show that are helping us build an alliance, whether that be public servants or other conservative organizations. And that other conservative organization's influence and alliance is growing, folks. We're uniting. We need your help, as you know. Anyway, let me get back into what Bob Schultz was saying. And I'm going to kind of reread a little bit, because yesterday we pointed out that the very first thing, and I've said this before, the very first thing that is the burden of the court, or the burden has to be proven that the court that you're coming to has jurisdiction, right? If you go to, you know, your local court, or, you know, because, you know, like a district court, and you want to divorce your wife, they would say, I'm sorry, you have to go to family court. This is an inappropriate venue for that. We're, you know, here to talk about constitution, business, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, traffic court is a different type of court as well. Technically, folks, this is how far advanced they have gone with the admiralty courts. And we want to get into this. I've already talked to Brent Allen Winters about having him on the show so that we can actually talk about common law courts. What does it take to establish them? And what does it take to get common law grand juries formed so that you know? Because that's what we're supposed to have. The fact that they created this ability of creating revenue from traffic citations and so forth, when the intent was to actually, you know, make the road safe and to, you know, try to help people behave safely, you know, within the spirit of the law. Instead, they've gone down this path of enforcing the letter of the law. Oh, you didn't come to a complete stop. You know, talk about technicalities. If there was nobody at the intersection and you had clear view, and you could tell, I mean, have you ever been on that country road where you could actually see all three, you know, the left and right and straight ahead, there are no cars coming because there's nothing obstructing you. There's no trees, there's no foliage, nothing. You can actually see that the roads are barren. And somewhere there's some cop, or they have these meters that say you didn't come to a complete stop. So what? What law did you really break? Because there's a stop sign there? You slowed down, you looked both ways, you followed the spirit of the law, not to just throw caution to the wind and just lurch out there without even looking. Anyway, let me get back to what Bob is talking about in this appeal. Surely the rule was not meant to apply to a case like this where there was no defense. In other words, Congress never responded. And more importantly, the fact that the court actually accepted and forwarded it out. In other words, they accepted jurisdiction. When they forwarded out this basic law case, this suit against Congress, they, in forwarding it out, accepted jurisdiction. What they could have said was, no, this we have to remand this down to, you need to take this to the state. You need to take this somewhere else because we don't have jurisdiction. They accepted jurisdiction. The only response to the complaint besides the district's court, because if you look, by the way, if you look at all of these other cases where they use the no standing, quote unquote, rulings, they never forwarded those cases off to Dominion or whomever. But as far as the defamations, those went through, right? I'm telling you, folks, we're being played and we're being played hard. This is hardball. We need to get going. The only response to the complaint, besides the district court's issuance of the summons ordering the defendants to respond or face a default judgment, came from the district court in the form of a memorandum opinion and order filed on June 16, 2021 that concluded, in sum, the plaintiffs have failed to establish Article III standing, and as a result, this court lacks jurisdiction over this action. See, my folks? See, my friends? Actually, what we've got right here is evidence that, one, they actually accepted jurisdiction, and now all of a sudden, after we're asking for the summary judgment, they come back and say, well, you know what? We don't think we have jurisdiction now. Something changed. Some laws of physics have now changed where we don't have jurisdiction. Anyway, we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so as I keep harping on this, you know, you can't play it both ways. You can't accept a case and accept jurisdiction and then all of a sudden say, we're not accepting jurisdiction now. come on. Anyway, it moves on and says, under those circumstances, plaintiff's reply papers could not be filed in the district court. They had to be filed at the Court of Appeals. Those papers could not be part of, quote, the original papers and exhibits filed in the district court. In light of the ongoing, so what he's saying is because they didn't even allow the case to be heard, Now he can't even, you know, expound upon that. They already accepted jurisdiction. I wish he probably would have said that. He may say that somewhere, but it's not here so far. The original papers and exhibits filed in the courts in light of the ongoing constitutional crisis at the heart, and this is where we wrapped up yesterday, at the heart of the complaint, plaintiffs immediately appealed to the Court of Appeals from the district court's order. So they're doing everything that they're supposed to. They're playing the paper shuffle the way they're supposed to. So on July 16, 2021, this court issued an order which set the return date for the appellant's brief and appendix at September 7, 2028, and stated in relevant part, quote, all issues and arguments must be raised by appellants in the opening brief. Now, this is unusual. This is why Bob, I talked to Bob in September, because this was right after he did this in August, and I talked to him in September right after he had already submitted this and before he was going to appear or actually have his case reviewed by the Supreme Court on the right of petition. It's a separate case that he's been pursuing. And just so you understand, he's been pursuing the right of petitioning government for years, and government keeps slapping him down and saying, we believe you're just trying to create a way to evade paying taxes. And that's the furthest thing from the truth. But the bottom line is that if there is a law that is broken, there is a consequence. And in our government, and what was established by Benjamin Franklin and moved forward and embraced by the Constitution, any petition for the redress of grievances that goes unheard or goes unresponded, then the petitioner has a right to no longer pay taxes. Now, I've told Bob that, you know, we can spend a lot of energy just trying to get government to give us our tax money back, but we don't have that time. What we have to do is we actually have to get the people mobilized and understanding and recognizing that it's either fix this ship or we go down with it. And I would rather, you know, try to work on fixing the ship than spending the time to get this money back. Does that make sense? I hope it does. The appellants perfected their appeal on August 23rd, 2021. Besides the need to address the issues included in the district court's response to the complaint, the appellants were forced to participate and address, quote, all issues and arguments defendants might have included in response to the applicant or to the complaint in the lower court, or might yet include a response to the appellant's brief. The appellant's brief included such issues and arguments. Naturally, appellant's brief included factual evidence in support of their arguments. Given word and page limitation rules, the factual evidence took the form of exhibits attached to the sworn affidavit, much the same as would have occurred in papers filed in the district court if the response to the complaint had come from defendants rather than a case closing order by that court. So, you know, he's basically poking the court here in the eye. At the direction of this court, appellants filed a motion that read, quote, appellants hereby move the court for permission to file the affidavit that accompanied appellant's open brief as an affidavit or in the alternative as a supplemental appendix. The court's denial of the appellant's motion to accept the affidavit is highly prejudicial, for the affidavit does nothing more than provide the court with factual evidence in support of all issues and arguments presented in the appellant's brief. So in other words, he already gave them all of these things in the brief itself. So why are they asking for these things instead of hearing the case? In response to the district court's sua sponte, which is Latin for something, I don't know, dismissal of the case for lack of jurisdiction, the appellant's brief argues not only the constitutional jurisdiction of the court, it also replied to the district court's judicial crafted set of exceptions to their obligation to hear and decide a matter that is within the court's constitutional jurisdiction, providing factual evidence in support of their arguments in the form of exhibits attached to the sworn affidavit. Now, he's basically kind of stating the same thing, but stating it a little bit differently. To be clear, the affidavit consists entirely of exhibits containing factual evidence in support of arguments presented in appellant's brief, arguments that challenge the basis of the district court closure of the case. Now, folks, you know, we wouldn't even be in this situation if the attorney generals were actually attuned and understood the Constitution. They would have jumped on this on their own. But they're not. They have been trained by the progressive education system, and they accept the annotated Constitution or how the federal government wants to play ball with us and how they have changed the Constitution. Here's the interesting thing. And this is an aside, I get it. Here's the interesting thing. When I sent this letter out, this email out talking about the Electoral College and actually laid out part of the Electoral College, you'd think that legislators would kind of go and read that part of the Constitution. And you would think that they would come to the conclusion to go, oh my goodness, we are not administering the presidential election the way we're supposed to. They should notice that there's no allowance for the Electoral College to be determined by a party. The Electoral College, by Article 1 in the Constitution, the electors are the people's representatives. You don't get this opportunity for these parties to go off and create their own little representatives, and based on a popular election, that's how they want to do this. No, the people actually get to choose who their elector is, and the state legislature should not have... It's almost like saying that they're going to throw the state legislature one way or the other. In other words, it becomes 100% one way or 100% another, because that's what they do with the Electoral College. When you vote for governor, and if you vote for governor and the governor's Republican and the popular vote puts a Republican in office, then all the Republicans running for the state legislature, Senate and House, instantly, they win. And it moves the entire government towards one direction. That is not the design, and that is not the constitutional design of a Republican form of government. And so they've been bamboozled. This all started back in the 1800s when the parties actually started influencing and controlling the state legislators. The interesting thing is that they don't control the politicians anymore, right? They may be playing in the background, but what they do is they do this nefarious activity of giving them this debauchery lifestyle that they can, indulge themselves in because they're above the law, and then they hold that over their head to basically control them. You know, these pedophiles, these other, dark evil, things that they have these guys do or let them do. They expose them, and then they start, indulging their dark desires, and then next thing you know, now they can control them because they can extort them. You have to highly question every person that's walked away from Congress over the past 10, 20 years. Yes, even Jason Chaffetz, all of them. You have to question why did they go into this and then walk away? What was it that they had over your head that you said, I can't play ball anymore? Because my deep morals, which I had lost for a moment in time for this whim of desire, I was able to, I made these mistakes, and now, I can't effectively do the job I'm supposed to do. That's what happens, folks. That's what happens all the time. And the fact is that everybody in the swamp, they've got something over all of them. Because why is it nobody talked about the Electoral College being unconstitutional on January 6th or any time after that? It's only been us, only been those of us who understand the Constitution and have been trying to tell you this is the case. This is the case we need to go after. Anyway, back to Bob's comments. For example, encountering the district court's reliance on the need for a showing of plaintiff's personal injury, as misguided as that reliance is under the facts and record of this case, plaintiffs argue that they have devoted a significant part of their lives to holding government accountable to the rule of law since 1997 and beyond. I know he goes back into the 80s. As evidence, plaintiffs provided as Exhibit F annexed to the affidavit a copy of the We the People Foundation for Constitutional Education Incorporated Certificate of Incorporation that lists plaintiffs as founders. And so he's laying it on the line for these guys and saying, hey, look, you know, we're doing everything we can and we've been doing this. And now you're telling us that we have, you know, no standing? Are you serious? We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so as I was just reading, let me just keep moving forward here. It is well known and easily verifiable that the foundation and its predecessors, with plaintiffs' personal involvement, has been the force behind more than 130 lawsuits. So it's not like they just, you know, this is the first time at the dance, going to the show, however you want to refer to it, that they brought 130 lawsuits against government officials to hold them accountable for stepping outside the boundaries drawn around their power by our state and federal constitutions. As another example, appellates argued in the opposition to the district court's findings regarding the issue of causation and redressability, footnote number 2. The appellates supported their argument with exhibits G and H annexed to the affidavit. And yet another example, appellants argued in opposition to the district court's finding regarding the issue of the obligation of Congress to respond to plaintiffs' First Amendment petition for I want to see the right here, because it's a right. This is a legally protected right. As yet, Another example, appellants argued in opposition to the district court's finding regarding the issue of the obligation to respond to the plaintiff's right of First Amendment petition for the redress of grievances. That's what I just inserted, the right. Appellants supported their argument with Exhibit A annexed to the affidavit. Removal of the affidavit with its factual evidence from the record on appeal is unwarranted and clearly prejudicial to the appellants. It would unjustly weaken the appellant's argument, seemingly to favor the preconceived idea. Surely, FRAP rule, federal, I forget what it is, it's at the very beginning, but anyway, the appellate court rule, does not apply to this case where there was no appearance by any defendant in the district court, much less any papers filed by the defendants. So in other words, they couldn't just throw the case out because the defendants didn't show up and say, you have no standing now. Does that make sense? What they had to do was they actually had to move forward, and they had to bring forward, and just so you understand, there are legal defenses, and this is the interesting thing. If you didn't know this, the Senate and the House have separate legal counsel that is supposed to represent them, and these people are on the books and hired to actually do those types of things, but they have never been dragged into court. So why do they even have these lawyers there? This is the biggest sham I have ever... I mean, when you read through the history of how government has manipulated and shammed people and so forth. I mean, we're at a point where government is driving government, and the globalists themselves are pulling the strings on all of this. So anyway, going back to this, the defendant in the district court, much less any papers filed by the defendants, and no opportunity for the plaintiffs to file any papers in the district court in reply to the district court's case, closing memorandum, opinion, and order. I mean, they leaped to an opinion before there was even any defense provided. Conclusion. On the basis of the above, the appellants request a reversal of the court's denial of appellant's motion for leave to file the affidavit as an affidavit or as a supplemental appendix, and B, a reversal of the court's affirmation to the district court's October 1st, 2021 order, thereby honoring the appellant's standing, the court's subject matter jurisdiction, and the appellant's petition cause claim for such other relief as the court may deem improper. So we're going to get this out. We're going to get this actually posted. So it actually going to get it. It's actually up posted. I'm sorry. We actually have the appeal, this motion for this appeal up there. And we also have on the take action page, the information, the district attorneys you need to actually go and pursue. There are still some district attorneys we're going to get up there, but just keep coming back to the take action page so that you can, you know, look at who else you can call. If you've already called everybody, come back and check it out and figure out who's added so that you know, okay, I know I called all these people. I'm going to call these people now. The people that we want you to call is we want you to call, obviously, the offices of the, and we'll call them sympathetic, people that should be defending the Constitution because they actually honor and they believe their oath of office is a legal and significant liability or obligation. Significant obligation is the better way to say it. And so what we want you to do, and you can tell folks, I definitely don't, I create outlines. I do not create dialogues that I read because I just don't read that well. When my mind is thinking about all these other things, I mean, it's really easy for me to get distracted. You just hold a shiny object in front of me, and you could probably, you know, I can easily also start going down these rat holes. And the reason why I go down these rat holes is because I usually have all of these other things in my mind. But anyway, back to what you need to do. We want you, we've already started by giving you the information to, and let me get this name right, because his name is Mitchell Cawthorn, C-A-W-T-H-O-R-N. He was elected in 2021 to serve the last half of the, help me out here, of the term, because Mark Meadows, who was a member of Congress, I don't know, moved on. I don't know what happened to Mark, but he had to be replaced. So Madison Cawthorn was actually elected in 2021. Now the progressives, why is he important? Why do you need to reach out to his office? Because I already have. I already called him and said, you know, if you really want to shut up the argument against him regarding him being a part of the insurrection, just because he was there, he has the opportunity to take control of the narrative, because all he has to do is actually start countering any time they call this an insurrection, saying, you know, near as I can see this, folks, we have a right to be able to petition government. And as a matter of fact, it says right here in the First Amendment that this right cannot be abridged. Why was the Congress doors locked from the people on January 6th, when we have a right? There's nothing in there that says, oh, because of January 6th or because we've got these other administrative duties that we cannot come in to petition you. The fact is, it is Congress that violated the law by not allowing the public to be able to come in and petition them, because they knew we were out there. They knew what we wanted. We wanted an absolute constitutional election. We did not want to see the sham move forward. And he didn't know about this petition that we were doing. Nobody understood what we... And it's not that we hadn't been telling you. Go listen to my podcast. Go listen to last December, or I should say the 2020 December. We had been talking. We went on for weeks about this and telling people where to mail these things and what to do. So it's not like this was a big secret, but it's just not that we have the big microphone and the big reach that the real conservative entertainers who really do entertain you, you know, and they give you these really pithy comments. But near as I can tell, all they're there to do is to ensure. This is why I just think it's a sham. The way it seems like, the way so many people are, you know, want to see Trump become president, but they're not wanting to follow the Constitution. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense, folks. This is why I truly believe we need to start abandoning all of those who are not unifying on the Constitution. If their language is not, this is the Constitution, this is what we need to be doing, this is what we have to do, then they are either a part of the controlled opposition, or they're absolutely clueless, and or they are focused on money and things that aren't important to us right now. I mean, if you go on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the least significant and 10 being the most significant, an organization's relevance at the time where we're at the precipice of our demise, I'm telling you that organizational relevance is zero to me. The survival of this nation is the 10. The survival of our Constitution and our liberties and this republic, that is a 10. We have to put our priorities straight. We got to stop putting the party ahead of the Constitution. We have to start putting these myopic issues ahead of the Constitution. And you know I'm right. You know, this isn't about GR just being right. I'm just stating it like it is. You know, every once in a while you're doing something and somebody walks in and states the obvious. That's all I'm doing, is stating the obvious. Oh, you playing cards? Well, you see a bunch of guys sitting around a card table and they got their chips and cards in hands. And hey, what you guys doing, playing cards? It's just stating the obvious, right? And what we do is literally stating the obvious. We're telling you what is in the Constitution. We're telling you what needs to be done. And we know, we do know, because we see our ratings where we're getting streamed and so forth. And as things are moving forward, it's interesting who is being, you know, thrown. I don't want to say, you know, they're losing their rating standing, but you know, people are starting to get it. They're starting to understand that this guy's really, these people, you know, they may have really good sound bites, may have really interesting analogies, but they do not possess the substance of actually what do we need to do to, about this. And it ain't about homeschooling, folks. That is not the solution. We as vigilant citizens must hold all of government, not just the school boards, accountable. They're sending you on these red herrings that really will not fix the problem. Anyway, we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
You know, folks, at the beginning of this year, I really laid it out there that we have an opportunity. We have an opportunity of changing the direction because the Constitution begs compliance. Every public servant, it orders compliance because every public servant must be in compliance. Now, if you want to really start looking at what we are talking about regarding this upcoming election, that technically, because I had no idea where we were. I did mention that there was this lawsuit. That's one of the reasons why I called Bob this weekend. And so I didn't know where, you know, all of this stuff was, you know, how it was churning and all of that, which is why we ended up taking this hard redirection in focusing on this lawsuit, in focusing on the fact that we need to get attorney generals. If we get one, it will force the appellate court to hear this case. Two, if we get two attorney generals, this will force this out of this district court's appellate court case and move it to the Supreme Court and in front of the line. Because, see, when the suits are, because this is how sovereign, if you understand why the court will allow two states to become precedents or become the priority for them to hear a case and actually clear their books to be able to hear this case that these states are bringing forward. I'm here to tell you, folks, that speaks to the sovereignty and the respect that the federal government should have towards these sovereign states. So they can actually disrespect and get away with violating our rights and actually violating the legal processes that they're supposed to follow to an average Joe citizen foundation like Bob Schultz. They're getting tired. They believe because he doesn't have the press and because you're not behind him anymore,
He used to have a lot of people. He had an organization of 100,000 people. You know how and what happened to his organization where he had over 100,000 people, regular people involved with the We the People Foundation movement back in 2009 to 2012? It was around that time frame. I think it was 2009 when the IRS injected and said, we're looking at your tax-free status. We do not believe that you're a tax-free entity. We believe you're making profits. And they literally took him through the grinder. It wasn't until, and I talked about this on my radio program, it wasn't until 2019 where he finally saw the light of day and put all of these suspicions. He should have done a countersuit against the government to say, you had no right to do this. You literally harassed me and destroyed my foundation. Because that's what happened. He was so tied up in court fighting the IRS that he was unable to do what his foundation was actually trying to do. Now, was he trying to do Republic Review? No. But does he believe in Republic Review? Yes. What he wants to do, and we're going to, I really would like to have him on. I don't know if I can get him into a Skype interview because I don't know if he has Skype. But if he does, I'd actually like to have a long-term conversation because he wants to launch this citizens vigilance effort. In other words, there's a lot of people out there that say we actually have to create this citizens' vigilance. We have to get away from foundations. We got to get away from these independent myopic issues and actually get into this, what we call an organized vigilance of the citizens at the county and state level. This basically, I talked about this a year ago. I talked about this for a long time, and we've gone through kind of the roles. We've gone through this. What we're going to do is we're going to basically lay out the graphics, not the briefing, but the graphics for you so that you can kind of see what a constitutional county will look like. You know, what are the components that are critical for you to truly have a constitutional county? I will tell you two things that no county has, and that's why they're not constitutional. They don't have common law courts, common law grand juries. That's one. And the other is that they don't have, what we call a militia, or actually we'll call it the organized militia, to respond and account to the sheriff. The sheriffs and the county commissioners need to come up with the budget, whether it's just for comms purposes, whether for whatever they can do. They need to be able to move forward, and the sheriff needs to be able to have these reserves so that if necessary. So let's just say you have, King County. King County, Washington comprises of a lot of the urban area as well as Seattle. And I think even possibly Tacoma or part of Tacoma. It's a pretty large, population in that county. The sheriff of that county should have what I'll call a posse or the militia that is organized and be able to call upon them. And if they had a constitutional county where the Black Lives Matter and what ended up happening over a year and a half ago in setting up that autonomous zone, the sheriff should have been able to swoop right in and put that protest down before that autonomous zone was even created and before Seattle could even get engaged, because the sheriff has the ultimate authority over that county for law enforcement. Seattle may have their own, but his supersedes. And as a matter of fact, the reason why Inslee has blood on his hands, is Governor Inslee, is because he should have called upon all state resources, the Washington State Patrol, the county sheriffs, and so forth, in descending and putting down this. But he understood that this was an important apparatus, or these protests are an important apparatus in creating fear and trying to get everybody to surrender their liberty so that they can have security. That's what government does. Now, I want to get into one other really quick thing, because we're heading down this path of a cashless society. This is going to become a real discussion before it even becomes a discussion, because they're going to start talking about it before we even know that they're talking about it. Why is it that they're already talking about it? Because of cryptocurrency and what they're seeing in these things like Bitcoin. the fact that Bitcoin has such, you know, you're buying into Bitcoin and your money is now actually, you know, how many times more valuable because more people want to get into it because they have convinced, and this is a new age concept that has completely abandoned the real world concept of money and monetary issues. You know, it's one thing for a private entity to kind of create a little currency, but to be honest, go read the Constitution. Who has the responsibility of creating the currency? The state and the federal government, period. So when Bitcoin and these cryptocurrencies started popping up to say, you know, this is what we want to do, this is what we want to do, they should have shut them down and said no. One of the reasons why they want this is because this is, they're creating pressures that get more and more people to say, you know what, why do we even have cash? Let's just get rid of cash. I'm here to tell you folks, we're being played and we're being played, and people are making money on both sides of this. The conservatives and these people that, you know, have this, oh, this is a great idea, but nobody actually hits the reality, slap them in the face and say, you know, if you go into a cryptocurrency, you have shifted money from being your property to becoming something that you have access to, but it's not yours, it's not your right. You may have some legal, you know, documentation and a, you know, some thread of, you know, money. You've actually taken your property and invested it into something that could be wiped away just like that. Why is this important? Because when the government takes this over, all of these cryptocurrencies will be wiped out. They will not be allowed. They will become a part of a black market and they will seize control of it because thou shalt have no gods before their God, their godless secular God. Thou shalt have no money that is greater than their money. They want full control and subjugation. And when they come along with this and everybody's going to go, this is great. This, I'm telling you, folks, it is done. We've been played. We've been played to the fullest. I want to have Mark Lerner on. He had some... he had some surgery on his voice and some vocal cords and so forth. And he is the founder of the Constitutional Alliance. He has done all the research on Real ID. And you know, you've heard me tell you that the chip and those types of things are not the mark. Don't believe that, you know, as long as you don't get a chip, you're okay. That in itself is misinformation. The fact is, and it's not about them giving it to you, it's about you surrendering. You know, how can you become a citizen in Christ? You have to surrender to Christ. How do you become a citizen in Satan? You have to surrender to him. It's the same thing, folks. We can no longer look at things and say, oh, they're going to compel us. No, they're going to come along with a solution that most people will gladly surrender. That's how evil this is. That's where we are as a society and as a world. So when we come back in our next episode, because I'm literally just seconds away from being done, we're going to pick up where we left off. We're going to talk more about the citizens' vigilance holding government accountable and citizens accountable, just like Bob is talking about, and creating these constitutional counties. I also want to actually go through and kind of give you an outline of all of the different topics that we're going to go into. This isn't just about, you know, me talking about one law case or anything like that. This is not a one-trick pony here. We've got the entire gamut and the things you need to understand, the entire gamut of government and how to save our liberties and our Constitution. Folks, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.